Welcome to CPA Practice Advisors Tech to Go podcast series, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists. These thought leaders tackle issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of CPA Practice Advisor, coming to you with episode 60 of Tech to Go. I'm here today with my regular co-host, Randy Johnston, who's a principal at K2 Enterprises as well as Network Management Group Incorporated. So welcome today, Randy.
Good day, Darren, and welcome to all our listeners.
Got a lot of stuff to talk about today, Randy. There's a lot happening, and you and I haven't done a podcast for a couple of months, so I know you've been really, really busy, as of I, and so it'd be good to catch up today.
It will indeed. In fact, I was amazed. We had so many commitments around the country, it was hard to just put our two schedules together. But that didn't stop the march of the hardware and software releases that hopefully we'll get to many of those today.
Yeah, it sounds like you and I spoke briefly before we got started that sounds like accounting firms are doing fairly well. And are out looking for help. Is that what your assessment?
Yes, it's been interesting over the, let's say, May, June, and probably even back into April timeframe. Fundamentally, every CPA firm that I've spoken with has reported increased revenue for this calendar year of 2012. They seem to be pretty happy with the new clients that they're adding, as well as the new services being sold. And so, anywhere from 5 to 14% growth year over year is pretty commonly reported. So I'm happy about that. Further, there's a lot of technology projects that I think were being held, which have been released, probably part of the reason that the folks are talking to me in part. But they also are reporting their clients are doing well. So maybe we're close to making a turn on this whole economic downturn thing.
That's awesome. Well, I think today let's kick off, Randy, and talk a little bit about all the buzz around the tablets that are out in the marketplace. Kind of give us a rundown of the landscape of what's going on in the tablet marketplace.
All right, be happy to spend some time on that. First, as you and I have talked, the new iPad, or iPad 3 as some people still call it, was released in the March timeframe this year. The key things that were in the new iPad was a four-core processor. Most of the processing power of that four-core was used to drive the much more sophisticated screen, and the applications got bigger as they were updated to support that higher screen resolution. This actually has driven me to reconsider the memory recommendations in the iPads. Before, I was pretty happy in the 16, 32 gig range, and 64 became more the outlier. But it became pretty clear that if you have very many apps loaded, you're doing much on the machines that are running in high resolution. 16 gig gets pretty tight. Apple, over the last 2 weeks, has only been selling 16 gig iPad 2s on their websites, no other models. And frankly, I'm not sure that they're that usable. So we are suggesting at this point on the iPads that you give pretty strong consideration to the larger 32 and 64 gig models. The display is brilliant. The product's a little bit heavier, but it's a nice rev on the iPad. Now, also released in this whole recent past, the Galaxy Tab 2 was released in April. On April 26th, as I recall. And the product uses the latest version of the Android operating system. It's very similar to iOS 3, maybe even iOS 4. So what's happening is Android developers are catching up or closing the gap between the Apple platforms and theirs. This Android 4.0 ice cream sandwich product is quite nice. And to help give a little perspective on this, for myself, I have a fully dressed Kindle Fire, a Galaxy Tab 2, and a new iPad with all of the appropriate hardware and software to do the tasks that I wanted to do, email, web browsing, PDF editing, etc. So I purchased the appropriate apps and got the right amount of memories and all those things. And I'm also running virtual machines with Citrix VMware View, so I can run PC apps on all three of those platforms, as well as Citrix, so I can run Citrix on all three of those platforms. My total spend on the Kindle Fire was $256. My total spend on the Samsung Galaxy was $301, and my total spend to date on the iPad has been $1,070. So the iPad has the clear advantage of being a 10-inch model, and over the last 2 weeks, courts, Apple filed a lawsuit in the courts of California asking for a restraining order on the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10-inch model because the designs they thought were too close and so forth. So right now you can't buy a 10-inch Galaxy Tab in the state of California, at least. So for purposes of business apps, I've noticed that I can run all of the things that I desire to run across all three platforms, and there are certain things I can do on the Galaxy Tab that I cannot do on either the iPad or on the Fire. So it makes me wonder about positioning of the Tab as a potential business tool for a lot of our listeners. The last two I'll mention, and then maybe we'll go back a little more conversational mode. Google also introduced their Nexus 7 in this recent past. I have not received or set that up yet, so I'm anxious to see that. I believe it's supposed to ship on July 18th. The initial order for that with all of what I think are the right parts was $304.91, since I just bought that in the last little bit. I know it quite well. It is Android 4.1, or the new Jelly Bean Android operating system. So we'll see if that plays out as a reasonable product. An objection I've got to the specs is it uses a little lower resolution, a 720p, which I'd prefer to have it higher. And then last but not least, Microsoft at least showcased their Surface tablet. A lot of the Windows 8 attributes to it, the ability to run Microsoft Office natively on the product. Although this specification wasn't released or this detail wasn't released, we have a suspicion that the Surface is running Microsoft Office in a ROM chip, meaning it can run very, very rapidly on the tablet compared to any of the other offerings we have for running Microsoft Office or OneNote or any of those products. For example, like I run OneNote on my iPad. Not the same experience as running OneNote on a computer. So that's a bit of a rant to get us there, but you'll notice really four or five major competitors. And oh, by the way, to sum it all out, iPad clearly the current volume leader and winner. The major IDC type of sources, Gartner, are claiming somewhere between 110 and 120 million tablets we sold globally this year.
That's amazing. And when you talk about the price points, Apple is selling at 3 to 5 times the other couple of devices that you quoted prices on, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Yet dominating the market share at this point.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And so, Darren, one of the other things we learned along the way was license agreement. And something we didn't talk about in preparation for our call is on my team at NMGI, I have multiple Apple mobile authorized technicians. And one of the things we learned along the way here is that for business purposes, iCloud can't be used for synchronization. So I know a number of our listeners use iPhones and iPads and have hooked their devices up into the iCloud mechanism, a very elegant synchronization piece, But by license agreement, the end-user license agreement, it specifically prohibits the use of iCloud for synchronization. It specifically prohibits the Find My iPhone or Find My iPad feature. And then there's a beautiful mobile device manager that's part of the Apple operating system to set up your iPads consistently. And that is also prohibited except for employees. So for our listeners who might be violating license agreements, we want to put up a pretty big caution, probably a completely non-tablet related topic, but we have seen more software license audits in the last 90 days than in the prior 2 years combined.
Very interesting. What's causing the violation with iCloud, Randy?
Well, in the end-user license agreement, it says if you use the device for any business purpose, you may not synchronize to iCloud. So if you think about many users, probably yourself being an example, but I won't put you on the spot.
Sure.
You use your device for both personal and business purposes. And if you're like I certainly do it. If you're like most users, you get the license agreement and you say yes, and you don't really read it in any depth. But those specific inclusions are in the current Apple end-user license agreement. So we suspect Apple is going to come up with a business service to allow you to cure this later in the year.
Yeah, because as soon as you add Exchange to your iPad and bring your emails in from your office Exchange server, you're using it for business purposes, it seems.
Yes, you are. You certainly are. And if you think about it, most of us use our devices for both business and personal. We mix it together. We're doing a little bit of email. We're surfing the web, whatever. But
reading,
clearly, as soon as you hook that email up, or like myself, I use B&A Tax Research on it, and I use CCH's IntelliConnect on it, and so forth. Yep, sure enough, right away, I've got a business purpose. So, you know, I've been very specific about how I make the synchronization, because I try to follow the doggone license agreements, even if I disagree with the strategies.
Yeah. Well, I have to give Apple, and you may or may not agree, but, you know, from what I've seen with the display on my iPad 3, the display is very, very nice and very clear.
Oh, the Retina display is absolutely magnificent, which really we'll visit again. Maybe we should do it now with the new MacBook portable Retina display.
Yep.
It is, Apple replaced their 17-inch MacBook Pro lines with new Retina display units. They're absolutely magnificent. All reviewers are saying exactly the same thing, that it's just the new generation of display. And I don't know how displays will get much better in the next 1, 2, 3 years. I just don't know how you'd improve them.
I've used one quite a bit. What I like, so they, in the prior MacBook Pro line, you had, 13, 15, and 17-inch. 17 was kind of a beast. I always carried a 13-inch MacBook Pro. They replaced the 17, as you said, with a 13 and a 15-inch Retina display with a couple of different flavors in there. And the Retina display and the physical decrease in size or thickness and weight is stunning. I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and in fact, so this whole issue of, size, let's face it, both of us have carried MacBook Airs or Air 2s for some time. You know, when you can get on an ultralight or an ultrabook, that's really a great deal. But sometimes the power of the smaller machines just aren't quite good enough.
Yeah.
So there are times when you go back to the heavier product just because you want a little bit more horsepower, you need a little bigger display and so forth.
You know, I find, Randy, I have the Air like you do, and I also have the Pro. I find I carry the Pro more than I carry the Air because it's like running out of cash. I just want to have enough when I'm traveling that I have everything I need at that point, you know. And I have a tendency to throw the MacBook Pro in my case.
Yep, understood. And even though I don't like the weight, I carry a workstation box for the same reason, because if I'm on the road and if I have to get some serious work done, which frankly most of the time I do, I got to have the extra horsepower with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as I prefer to be on a lighter product, it's just not in my cards. Now, for many of our listeners, I understand you don't travel like Darren and I do, so sometimes that biases our view of the world. But we'd suggest that even if you just go back and forth between home and office, that you might consider, you know, looking at what desktop computers can do for you in that configuration today, because the new workstation desktops are so inexpensive, with many of them being below $700. You can have some of the biggest, fastest desktop computers available today for, you know, $700 an endpoint. Well, you can't really touch it for the price of a notebook, and why would we then carry a notebook back and forth with us if that's all we're doing with it? I would recommend you don't do that and look at something like a MacBook Air or some other ultralight or ultrabook for when you travel. Perhaps for when you travel, all you really need is a tablet. And I know a lot of professionals have gotten to the point that they're really going for a meeting and they need to do a little email, a little bit of note-taking. That's enough for them. So you've got to think about your needs specifically.
You and I talked briefly, Randy, about notebooks and where you thought notebooks were heading later this year. What's your take on that again?
I appreciate you asking that question, Darren, because at the risk of sounding a little radical, I've asked most of my clients to hold up most of their purchases here in 2012 until after the September releases of the hardware. Now, some of the hardware releases began in June, and they've been out for a couple of weeks as the point in time we're recording this. But we are seeing a pretty radical shift to smaller, faster computers. And if I'm reading the future tea leaves correctly, I think it's going to mean that the end of the notebook era is just about on us. We've carried these larger portable computers for some time, but the new generation ultrabooks and ultralights, of which that new MacBook Pro is an example, give us a foretaste of how much horsepower we can get in a very small unit. So most of the Dell or HP or Lenovo laptops that the firms have in their possession today will be slower than the ultrabooks of the September release.
Yeah.
Now, ultrabook is a defined term by Intel using Intel parts, but some of the specifications include not being thicker than 0.71 inches, and not being heavier than 3.1 pounds. If you use other processors, AMD, for example, or you don't quite fit into those very specific Intel specifications, the definition really becomes an ultralight. So the MacBook Air 2 that we have, that's a good example of an ultralight type machine. But if I can get our listeners to picture that we can get these very light computers that are faster than our existing notebooks, and the target price range for most of these is between $700 and $1,100. I've seen some down in the $500 range already. Maybe the days of buying notebooks are behind us.
Yeah, I think I would have to agree. And given that you kind of preface this by saying that you and I both travel a lot, and so weight and all that really matters, but I think it's starting to matter to a lot of people. At this point, you know, if you look at the high end, and I know, Randy, you priced this out, the high end MacBook Pro Retina display, which I think is going to sort of become the standard that people are going to follow. The high end of that market, you can get 16 gig of RAM if you customize that, quad core processor, and it's going to weigh, you know, probably in that 4+ pound range and be point maybe 7.2 or so thick. That's a beast of a machine.
It's magnificently beast of a machine, and you know, I dressed one out fully for me, and it was going to run about $4,300. Dr. Bob Spencer, who both of us know, did one similarly and landed about $4,100. So right now, those machines are examples of the ultra high end. But, you know, I also bought ultra-high-end notebooks that were $5,500 and $6,500.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think too much of it at the time because I was trading hardware and software dollars for productivity for me.
Sure.
And if you start thinking about it like that, you know, if you've got people carrying notebooks a lot, size and weight does, in fact, matter. And, you know, if we can get the weight of the computer down by half at about the same money, that's phenomenal as far as I'm concerned. Dropping a couple of pounds out of a bag for, you know, a slight of build auditor, let's say one that weighs between 100 and 120 pounds, they're not used to carrying all that weight. You could save them a permanent disability injury by giving them the right class of computer.
The other interesting thing I'm seeing, Randy, is especially with the MacBooks, and I know we keep talking about that, but I think it is going to be the standard, is, you know, we're not seeing any more spinning hard drives. Everything is going to be on flash storage at this point, and fairly large ones. The one I was talking about was 768 gigabyte of flash storage. Can you talk about that in just a minute?
Yes, the solid-state drives, which are really just memory-based drives, continue to drop in price. We've been recommending solid-state drives in all laptop purchases for at least 2 years. We've moved the solid-state drive purchases over into desktops, by the way, as a probable strategy as well, because the applications run so much more rapid by doing that. And the premium of a solid-state drive over a spinning hard drive is not particularly large. The reliability is much better. There is one little caveat on this whole reliability thing, though. We are seeing some failures which we cannot explain. There is a utility at a website, ssd-life.com, that lets you run intermittently diagnostics on your solid-state drives to make sure that they're okay. But they're trying to give you pre-warning failures. In any case, these solid-state drives, they extend your battery life, they shorten your boot times, they make your typical applications run faster, they run cooler so there's less fan noise, which is a big thing to me because I hate the noise of fans, and eliminating it anytime I can is a nice deal. And just in general, I think for most professionals, the money spent on an SSD comes back in spades over the life of the product.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, too. And I think that is going to be the standard going forward that we're going to see. I think, yes, Randy, it brings us – go ahead.
Yeah, I think it is exactly where we're at today. And to me, I just wouldn't spend much money on hard drives at all. I would consider whether a smaller SSD would get by. And I think you're going to be money ahead to get a smaller SSD and try to fit in that space rather than buying a larger, more generous hard drive as a rule of thumb.
Yeah, I would have a tendency to agree with you on that. I think it kind of brings us to this idea that there's some new operating systems that are going to be on these machines almost imminently at this point. I know Mountain Lion from Apple, I have downloaded and installed beta version, which is almost a release version on my MacBook Air. I really like it. Windows 8 ought to be releasing in the near future. Can you talk about your experience with the two of those?
Mm-hmm. The Mountain Lion, as you said, is a nice step forward. I think Apple's vision on that was to try to make the Mac environment run more like the tablets and get a more unified experience, might be one way to say it. I did notice in today's announcements that Apple has said that they're going to put antivirus and update protection automatically in the final release of Mountain Lion, which is a reverse of position for them. Traditionally, they've said no virus protection needed, and now they're saying we're just going to supply it automatically. Well, Windows 8 from Microsoft is also going to have antivirus built in and automatic. So the Windows 8 looks like it may go release to manufacturing here during this month. And if it releases to manufacturing, the rule of thumb is it takes about 60 days beyond that to get it into the open marketplace. Those numbers make sense to me with all of the significant hardware announcements for September, which means the hardware announcements in September can run this new Windows 8 operating system. Now, let's say I'm wrong. It's close. And Windows 8 also announced over this past week or so, there's going to be an upgrade available for any prior version of Windows, Windows XP, Windows Vista, or Windows 7 for $40 to Windows 8 Professional. So that tells me Microsoft is very adamant about rolling out all the old versions of the operating systems. Now, Windows XP, its support completely expires in April of 2014. So we're inside 2 years of a completely unsupported operating system. And for the listeners, I don't want you to be thinking that, you know, it works, so why should I worry about it? The answer there is, if you don't worry about it, you're creating significant security holes in your operating system. And part of the reason Apple changed their position was the, you know, fairly massive infection of Mac computers over the last 90 days with viruses. And we can't really allow client data to be compromised because of our lack of desire to do an upgrade or to install the appropriate protection. I certainly wouldn't want to be on a witness stand saying, were you doing all of the things that you thought were reasonable to do at the point in time? And no, if you're running Windows XP, that's an unreasonable thing to be doing. So that's a little bit of a rant down that path. Windows 8 itself, I don't see that it has that much added benefit for many of our practitioners that would be listening. Nice security features, the new Metro tiles, some of the gesture recognition, and so forth. You know, it's a good upgrade, but it's not caught my imagination of why it makes more sense. So I do not see any of the top 10 or 20 features of Windows 8 motivating me to do an upgrade. However, when you put desktop computers or laptop computers running Windows 8 alongside Surface, their new tablet, alongside Windows 8 phones, you wind up with a very interesting proposition of a Windows-like experience on tablets as well as on phones that's pretty transparent back and forth. You know, let's face it, your Mac Air runs well for you, or your Mac environment runs well for you, because you have remote access to your Windows computers and you have a lot of SaaS applications.
Right.
And you don't run too many native Mac applications, I don't believe.
I really don't. So, you know, outside of checking my airline miles with an app with American, or my miles with Starwood, or reading books, everything else is pretty much SaaS for me.
Mm-hmm. And so at that point, you know, it's almost a who cares what the platform is. I just want something that's reliable, secure, and relatively inexpensive. So I want something that's going to meet those three criteria. That's how I'm probably going to pick. Looking forward from a hardware perspective, I'm anxious for Windows 8 to arrive, because my target Ultrabook purchase, or next Ultrabook purchase, is the Lenovo Yoga, which is a combination Ultrabook tablet type of unit. So getting myself down where I'm only carrying one part instead of two with a tablet and a computer, I'm actually thinking I'm going to go back to one device. So we'll see if that's a good decision as a strategy or not, but I'm hoping less is more.
So advice for our listeners today, Randy, from what I've heard you say, is a lot of new hardware in the September time frame. So let's get through the October 15th filing season. Let's see where the hardware is at. We're going to have some operating system things to deal with, whether it's Windows 8 or Mountain Lion. What else did I miss in all of that?
You know, I think you got everything except that one stray comment on licensing. You know, if you are in fact still running Windows for a lot of your applications, Microsoft is also likely to change their licensing agreements in the September-October timeframe. Because of that, and because of where I think they're going, I'd like for our listeners to spend a little time in thoughtful preparation and updating their open license agreements with Software Assurance. So when the new hardware arrives, they can acquire the new hardware, but choose to run next generation Windows 8 or choose to stay on Windows 7. And likewise, they can choose to stay on Office 2010, which is, by the way, the choice I'd recommend, or they can choose to run the new Office 15, which will arrive in the same basic window. But the reason for that open license cure during the summer is there's way too many software audits going on and way too many dollars being paid in fines by firms where they were out of compliance on their licenses by very few quantity.
Yeah, I really like to see firms be in compliance as best they can. And there's no reason they shouldn't be. They just got to pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, they do need to pay attention, and that's a good thing to do during the summer. And you heard me say it earlier in our call here, and you've known this, I think, since the early 80s. I've been 100% adamant about being in compliance on software licenses. Now, I don't agree with them all the time, but I'll do what the license says if I know what it is. So that's why the iCloud thing is such a bother to me because,
yeah.
You know, I'd really love to be using iCloud for synchronization purposes, but it violates the end-user license agreement. And the risk to firms is way too high if they are not staying in compliance. So I hope I can encourage our listeners to clean the licenses up and kind of wait, bide their time a little bit for hardware until after extended tax season is complete.
Two other hardware tidbits, Randy, that I kind of told you about before we got started as we were preparing that I did recently in my conference room. We upgraded two of our conference rooms with 60-inch, really thin Samsung flat panel TVs. And instead of putting a PC in each of those rooms that drive those TVs, we put a Dell, sort of a mini appliance. I mean, you'll know what the terminology better than I do, but essentially a thin client that will connect that to my server, and I run a virtual desktop off of my server for each of those conference rooms. So we really don't have a device in the conference rooms that's driving the TVs. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense because that Dell small form factor piece that was mounted up behind the monitor and the Apple TV give you the best of all worlds. You can run your apps, or you can run from your iPad or your Mac directly. So if our listeners have not found that trick yet, if they're iPad users, which many of them are, the very simple $100 Apple TV lets you broadcast or project, if you want to think of it that way, from your iPad to the TV screen.
You know, that's going to be natively built into iOS. I think, is it built into iOS 5 for the mobile devices at this point, or is it going to be built into iOS 6? I know it's going to be built into Mountain Lion.
Yes, it is going to be built into Mountain Lion, and it is in iOS 5 today. So, you know, we've been doing that for a while with iOS 5. Supposed to be better in iOS 6, and I'm sure it will be, because Apple TV has really changed a lot over the last 2 years as well. One other tool, if our listeners happen to be non-Apple users, there's an appliance called Mactivia, M-C-T-I-V-I-A, I believe is how it's spelled, that allows sharing of Windows apps, tablets, or Apple iPad, iPhone, or Apple desktop images as well. So you kind of get all of the worlds for about $200 is what I recall that appliance cost.
So just to sort of set the stage, so how a firm would use this, Randy, or how we're using it in our firm, I may go into a meeting, turn on the TV, my virtual machine on my server is powering that TV from the background. We log in, you know, we do whatever we're going to do in that room, training, whatever. I might also go into that conference room with my MacBook Air that's currently running Mountain Lion, and my Air automatically sees that I have an Apple TV mounted to the back of that TV, and it allows me to project what's on my laptop up to that screen. So let's say I wanted to have my MacBook Air and I wanted to launch QuickBooks Online for whatever reason to show somebody, or Intacct, a SaaS application. It would just project up on the TV and it would be a nice way to do a presentation. Or maybe I just want to launch PowerPoint or Keynote on my laptop and project it up. Easily done. So just some interesting little technologies to use in a conference room that makes the experience for your clients way better from my perspective.
I think it is way better. And we know that some audit teams are doing their board-level presentations by carrying an Apple TV with them and connecting once they arrive at the client site, knowing that there's a TV that they're going to project from. So that part of the game is still a little clumsy, but I can see where this is headed, because over time I think we'll be able to walk into more meeting rooms and hook our computers or tablets straight into the displays without all the cabling and the Mickey Mouse that we've done historically.
Yeah. Well, the future is here for all that stuff, so hopefully our listeners can pick up on some of that and make use of it in their own conference rooms. Well, Randy, we're out of time today. Hopefully you have a great holiday. We're doing this right before the 4th of July, so it'll be released shortly thereafter. So hope for the best of the 4th for you.
Thank you very much, and tend to spend the day with the family and multiple picnics and parades, so it should be a good time.
Sounds like a great day in Hutchinson, Kansas.
So, well, I do appreciate all of our listeners' time and yours as well, Darren, and I look forward to talking about some of the new additional hardware that arrives over the next little while and some more software changes. 2012 is a heavy hardware change year, and it's lining up for the software releases that come in the fourth quarter.
You know, next time, Randy, that we get together, we've got to talk about this discussion from CCH about their, what they're calling their open information platform, and what that means to accounting firms and where the big vendors are kind of coming down in that space. So I think it's going to be an important strategic direction for CCH going forward.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That announcement, which was on, June 26th, which said, yeah, we're going to make our systems work with lots of other systems by providing common interfaces. That's a real big deal going forward, and I hope that more publishers will take the same strategy, because it allows us to seamlessly hook systems together. So, yes, that's a very important topic to talk about.
We'll talk about that next time. Well, happy 4th, Randy, and the best to your family.
Thanks very much, and all the same to all of you and listeners.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
For more info on the CPA Practice Advisor programs and our e-newsletter, visit cpapracticeadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 1-800-456-0864, extension 2107, or tune into future episodes where you'll be able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.